I want you to grab soundbite number one again, and then have some soundbite number 29 standing by. Back it up. Greetings and welcome back. Ladies and gentlemen, Rush Limbaugh, the EIB Network, and the Limbaugh Institute for Advanced Studies of Everything That Matter. No degrees, and we never shut down because the learning never stops. The telephone number, if you want to be on the program, 800-282-2882, and the email address, lrushbaugh@eibnet.us. I just want to have one more little turn at Biden's comments today. Actually, we're yesterday at the National Association of Black Journalists and the National Association of Hispanic Journalists virtual convention. And I'll tell you at the outset that some of you may have a problem with this. Some of you may have a bit of disagreement with me about this. But you'll see why. I'm gonna play two things for you. One happened back in 1987 on Nightline. The other one yesterday with Joe Biden. And here again, soundbite number one, NPR Lulu Garcia Navarro saying to Joe Biden, are you going to re-engage? See, are you going to re-engage with Cuba? The question is, so Trump's done this and Trump's done that and Trump's, you know, Trump's getting us out of the world and Trump's doing, this woman forget, re-engage with Cuba. Obama did that in a way that was not beneficial to the United States. So Trump comes along and takes the relationship with Cuba back to where it should have been. So now this woman is saying, since Trump is bad orange man, automatically bad guy, automatically wrong, Biden, automatically right, Democrat, answer to every problem. Are you going, and she is Hispanic herself, Lulu Garcia Navarro, are you going to re-engage with Cuba?
Yes, and by the way, what you all know, but most people don't know, unlike the African-American community, with notable exceptions, the Latino community is an incredibly diverse community with incredibly different attitudes about different things.
He's talking to an Hispanic reporter, at least, and he knows that. And he says, look, what you all know, but most people don't know, like Biden knows something that most everybody doesn't. You know that unlike the African-American community, you Hispanics, we love you guys. You are diverse. You have incredibly different attitudes about different things. But African Americans, hell, come on, man, they're all the same. You know what I mean? They think the same way. They act the same way. They're just the same. That's what he said. Let's go back to Nightline. 1987, Ted Koppel was interviewing then Vice President of the Los Angeles Dodgers, Al Campanis. And Ted Koppel said to Campanis, why is it, in 1987 here, folks, this is a year before this program began. Mr. Campanis, Vice President of the Dodgers, why is it there are no black managers, no black general managers, no black owners? Is there still that much prejudice in baseball today?
I don't believe it's prejudice. I truly believe that they may not have some of the necessities to be, let's say, a field manager or perhaps a general manager.
You really believe that?
I don't say that they're all of them, but they certainly are short. How many quarterbacks do you have? How many pitchers do you have that are black? Why are black men or black people not good swimmers? Because they don't have the buoyancy.
And that was the end of Al Campanis. The Los Angeles Dodgers sent him somewhere, never to be heard from again. Bye-bye. And Al Campanis was loved. Al Campanis was respected throughout the Major League Baseball community. We didn't call things communities back then. Throughout the world of Major League Baseball, he was, if you were in management with the Dodgers, you were considered to be in the top tier of baseball people. Remember, it was Branch Rickey of the Brooklyn Dodgers who broke the color barrier with Jackie Robinson. And they got this guy. And we didn't play the whole interview, but Ted Koppel gave Campanis two different, maybe three different times he gave him an out. Are you sure this is what you're trying to say, Mr. Campanis? Because up till this time, nobody thought Campanis was a racist. He just said he's a VP, general manager of the Dodgers. And you see, he really, obviously what he said here was highly, highly racist, but he really believed that there was something about skin color that determined their qualifications. That they just didn't have what it took, and they certainly couldn't float well enough to be good swimmers. He believed this. All right, now, I don't think this was the first time Campanis ever said anything like this, but it was the first time he had said it publicly in the media. Now, what I'm doing, I'm asking, how is this that different from the way Joe Biden is thinking here? I mean, Campanis says, I'm not saying all of them, but, I mean, they're certainly short of qualified people. And what does Biden say? Well, what you all know, most people don't, unlike the African-American community, with exceptions, the Latino community is incredibly diverse, incredibly different attitudes, unlike the African-American community. They're all the same, think the same. Joe Biden told everybody here how the Democrat Party looks at African-Americans. We had a call in the previous hour. Have the Democrats, in your estimation, always been this radical? Folks, yes. I thought about this even more during the top of the hour break. Yes. It has been one of my guiding beliefs the whole time that I have been hosting this program. And it's been something I have really tried to persuade people to at least consider, if not outright agree with me. The Democrat Party has always been the home of, I mean, if you have radical leftists like the Communist Party USA, or the weather and all those 60s protesters, what party were they voting for? They were voting Democrat. What party did the Students for Democrat Society, all of these rabble-rousers in the 60s were Democrats? What party were they loyal to? What party did they think was most likely to advance their radicalism? What party did they attempt to commandeer and take over? The Democrat Party, which now they have done. The Democrat Party has always had a majority of people in its leadership level who do not like the Constitution, who do not like the Bill of Rights, because it limits the government. The Democrat Party has always been a massive, big government, and let's grow it some more, political party, political organization. It is always the folks, the Democrat Party was in bed with the Soviet Union in the 1980s. The Democrat Party was assisting the Soviet Union establishing a communist beachhead in Nicaragua. And there was opposition to them. They were called the Contras. Reagan attempted to help them resist the establishment of a Soviet base in Nicaragua. Daniel Ortega was the head communist honcho, and there he is having sunglass purchase parties with Peter, Paul, and Mary on Fifth Avenue in New York. Soviet Union would authorize a bunch of big money for Nicaragua. Daniel Ortega go on TV, thank them. Democrats would send people down to Nicaragua telling him to shut up. You're making us look bad with this association. There isn't any question that the Democrat Party has, let me tell you, folks, it's this simple. The Soviet Union was much preferred to the Republican Party if you're a Democrat. The Republican Party has always, according to Democrats, the Republican Party has always been a bigger enemy than the Chinese, than the Soviet Union, than international communism. Republican Party has always been the bigger threat. The Democrat Party has spoken with more hatred and vitriol for the Republican Party than you will ever hear them speak of the Soviet Union or of Cuba. I mean, take a look at all the Democrats that romanticized communist leaders. So, yeah, the Democrat Party has always been as radical as they are now. Antifa and these anarchists, they're Democrats, and they go back to the 1980s. They go back to 1999. Some go back to the first World Trade Organization protests in Seattle. There's no question about it. This is, in fact, it's been very frustrating for me because it's so obvious. And so many people have refused it. I think a lot of people didn't want to see it, didn't want to believe that it was true. And then, of course, you have the media, which as much a part of the Democrat Party 30 years ago as they are today, you just didn't know it. But they would cover up all of these radical tendencies, both of the party and of particular individual Democrats. So, I don't think there's any question about it. So what's going to happen to Biden with this? The answer is nothing is going to happen to Biden. You're probably not going to hear this soundbite much outside of so-called conservative media. I don't think that Lulu Garcia Navarro will ask for time on CBS Evening News to broadcast this bite from Biden to you, Mr. Snerdly. But I think what's going to be going on in the internals of the Democrat Party are going to be saying, we cannot let this guy out. We've got to keep him in the basement. We cannot. There can't be any debates. This is exactly the kind of, they're not afraid of Biden losing his place. They're not afraid of Biden forgetting his thought. I mean, that's going to happen. They're afraid of stuff like this, that he doesn't even know the gaffe after he's committed it. He doesn't even know. Campanis didn't know. Al Campanis was given three different opportunities in that same interview by Ted Koppel to get out of it, to change what he was saying. But he didn't realize he'd said anything wrong. And neither here does Biden. All right, another brief break. We'll come back and resume with you on the phone right after this. Don't go away. Okay, so Fox News now has the Biden comment about being all kinds of diversity among the Hispanic community out there. Lots of different people, lots of different ways of thinking. But African-American, as you all know, they think pretty much the same. Unlike the Hispanic community, God, all kinds of diversity out there. Well, they've got the bite now at Fox, and they'll be assembling a panel to discuss it. And Democrats will dispatch people to say, hey, what's really right? No. You're misinterpreting this. No. He was simply talking to an Hispanic reporter, trying to be nice to a Hispanic reporter, but nothing to see here. We'll see how they decide to tackle this. Here's Eve. Eve is in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. Welcome and great to have you. Hi.
Hi, Rush. Boy, what an honor. Longtime listener, big fan. And Rush, I wish you well.
Thank you.
I have a question for you, and I've asked it of numerous people. And my question is, why the hatred of President Trump? He's not even elected. He gets elected legitimately, and people hate him to the point where you have the FBI going after them, the whole Russian collusion to take him out, and he wasn't even in office. He didn't put any, what was, outside of the fact he was going to go in and drain the swamp, do you think that was, I don't understand why they hated him
To understand the threat that Trump posed, and the threat that he posed was simply because of things he said that he was going to do. It's a great question, Eve, and to properly understand it, you have to know who those people really are. That wasn't just the FBI, and it wasn't just the intelligence community. It was the entirety of the Washington political establishment.
But to have that much power and for it to go through at that level, it actually frightens me to think that this has been going on as long as it is and still going on.
Wait, that what has been going on?
That the undermining of our president.
Oh no no no! That's no. Let me try this again. Trump was, of course, the focus and the target of this, but to understand the hatred, if you just look at it for what the hatred appears irrational, you don't understand it. All he did was run for president, get elected. He said he wanted to make America great again. Why is that controversial? Why did that? You've got to understand who these people are. You've got to understand what in the world the threat they think Trump poses, to understand their deep paranoia and fear, and to understand the irrational reaction and hatred, you've got to know who they are, not who Trump is. And to tell you, here's who they are. After World War II, the world order was reassembled. Europe had to be put back together. It had been destroyed by all those years of war, World War I and World War II. The Soviet Union was allowed to exist. The Soviet Union was almost permitted to exist. And if George Patton wanted to keep going and wipe them out, George Patton recognized the threat posed by state-sponsored communism, and the Americans stopped him. The Americans, some Europeans said, no, we're not following them back to Moscow or Leningrad. We're going to let them exist. And the New World Order, the order was established at that point. And that was the beginning of the desire all of those people had for the eventual day where the world would be governed by a single government, a globalist government that would not be located in Washington. It would be located in Europe somewhere, but where it was not really the point. What the point was, the United States was not going to enjoy singular superpower status after having earned it and achieved it by defeating the Axis powers in World War II and by allowing the Soviet Union to exist and grow as an enemy and as a communist client state. So from the 1940s all through 2016, the Washington establishment became focused on not America first, but the world first. Careers, educations, futures, the role for their children, all of this was factored into the planning, factored into how the world was going to be, so that various people would be assured of their place of power and authority in it. And it was working. They were going on just fine. Manufacturing jobs leaving America. America was eroding its superpower status. Then Trump comes along and promises to reverse all of it. Look, I want to try, another stab at this, because that the question that we had from Eve is really a good one. I'm sure a lot of people are wondering why this hatred that these people have for Trump certainly is irrational, meaning it doesn't make any sense to average, ordinary people. All Trump did was run for office. He got elected. He talked about making America great again. That, folks, seriously now, why in the world did that put the fear of God into so damn many Democrats and deep state people? Stop and think of this for a second. Make America great again. Remember all of the laughter from New York Times reporters like Thomas Friedman? Oh, how quaint. Oh, how old-fashioned. Oh, how stupid. Oh, how simplistic. Oh, how dumb. Make America great again. Oh, my. And then when they saw Trump was succeeding with it, then it became racist. Then it became, well, what he wants to do is go back to the days of slavery. What he wants to do is go back to the days of Ozzie and Harriet. What he wants to do is go back to the days when everybody went to church. What he wants to do is when everybody goes back to closing all the stores on Sunday and nobody uttered any profanity. That the reaction to make America great again should have opened everybody's eyes. That can be controversial? That there were people who opposed that? And they sure as heck did, folks. And then Trump is out there promising that he is going to stop Obama's plan to transform America. Well, what was that? What was Obama's plan to transform America? He was going to transform it out of the American founding. The objective of the Obama administration and everybody in the Democrat Party, the deep state back then, the American foundation or founding was, well, it was unjust and it was immoral. It was rooted in injustice and racism and bigotry. And we're going to change it. And it was all, that was all disguise language. We're going to get rid of freedom is what they meant. We're going to get rid of the idea that government answers to the people. Whoa, we can't have that. We can't not be in power when we have to answer to the people. It's going to be the other damn way around. People going to answer to us. Corporations are going to answer to us. Everybody going to answer to us. And here comes Trump saying, no, 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 no. Nope, we're going to go back where government answered to the people. But make America great again. And it brought them all out from under whatever they were hiding on, under men behind. That, right, that should have, and it did, I think. I think that opened so many people's eyes. I don't think Trump had a prayer of winning that presidency for the first 2 months of his campaign. I think everybody looked at it as a lark and a joke and some other purpose that he had. But then people saw the reaction to it. They saw the reaction to make America great again. They saw the reaction to Trump's common sense philosophy of America as a great place, America as the savior of the world, America as an exceptional place, the home of decency and goodness. That brought him out of the woodwork in opposition. No. We can't let America become great again. What did they tell you that meant? It wasn't good. America becoming great again, why, that's when all the racism and bigotry was dominant. It was sick, and it remains sick to this day, the opposition to the premise of making America great. Forget, again, just make America great, stop. They oppose. So when it began to look like Trump could win, then the laughing at him and the making fun of him changed into abject fear. My God, what if he wins? My God, why did they have to get rid of Flynn? It's the same thing. They had to destroy Michael Flynn because of what he was going to learn as Trump's director of the national security apparatus. They couldn't let Flynn get that position. He would learn everything about the coup, for one thing, but he would learn so much more about what actually had been going on within the darkest areas of the deep state, the United States. But let me just, briefly as I can, if you think that the people running the United States, and I don't just mean the president, folks, there is an invisible group of people, and it's, I don't mean to make this sound conspiratorial, it's a product of the size of our government. We got people that have never been elected to anything that are writing more laws than Congress is. They are bureaucrats at every cabinet-level bureaucracy, and they are writing regulations that limit your freedom and limit what you can do and say and limit how your house can look, limit how big it can be, limit this, limit that, and they're not elected. You don't even know who they are. It's a lot of power they have. Trump also vowed to get rid of all of that going on. But the point is, it's huge, this apparatus of invisible, unknown people. And they have paved the way for themselves. They have paved the way for their kids and their grandkids to have a place in this government, in this organization, whatever you want to call it, deep state. And it did not put the United States first. And the people that we're talking about largely are leftists and liberals. That's the vast majority of people in government in these invisible positions at the bureaucracies are liberal Democrats. That's their purpose. Conservatives don't like government, don't want to be part of government, certainly don't want it getting any bigger. We want it not being a big element in anybody's lives. The left is entirely different. The world revolves around government and therefore them. Liberals are born wanting to be in government. They are born wanting the power that comes along with it. And so their definition of success is populating government and growing the size of government and growing their positions in it. And we're not even in that game. And those people do not think of America as any super special place like you do. They think of America as a problem. You and I would look at America as the solution to most every problem in the world. They look at the United States as the problem. They look at the United States as unjust, undeserving of our superpower status. They think we have plundered, we have stolen resources from other nations and other people. We have used those resources to enhance ourselves and to make ourselves rich. That's illegitimate. We must pay a price for it. Look, folks, we are in a death struggle with communism. And the post-World War II world order established and validated the Soviet communist state, protected it, set it up as a legitimate competitor to the United States. Remember Madeleine Albright, former Secretary of State for Obama. The United States, she said, as the lone superpower, is the biggest destabilization that the world could ever experience. They do not look at us as the good guys, folks. The Democrat Party does not see us as the good guys. The American left, socialist, communists do not see the United States as the good guys. They don't see us as morally superior. They don't see us as anything special. American founding? No way. There's nothing exceptional about it. It's an accident. Madeleine Albright teaches at Georgetown that the American founding is just the accidental intersection of a bunch of people at a certain date range that led to things that we're just, at the end of the day, a big accident. And we look at the United States as blessed, divinely inspired. And they don't even, for the most part, believe in God. So to understand their hatred of Trump, to understand the irrationality of their hatred for Trump, you don't have to know anything about Trump. You have to know who they are, and you have to know why somebody who wants to make America great again so threatens them. And I think that would be almost impossible for most people to understand. So I think most Americans think the concept of America being great is great for everybody, especially those of us that live here. We don't look at it as a braggadocious thing. We don't look at it as any better than anybody else. We look at it as we're the shining light of freedom around the world. We're the beacon. We're the shining city. All that's what we believe. That's why so many people want to get into this country and live here. That's why so many people want to become Americans. But the hatred that they have for Trump is so irrational that it can't be based on just him. It is a reflection more of who they are and how they feel threatened by all of this. Shrink this down to, I find to help people understand massively complex things, if you can come up with an analogy that people can relate to and understand because it may exist where they live. Let me think about that. I got to get back to the phones, though, after this brief obscene profit break, so don't go away. When Trump said he was going to drain the swamp, they couldn't take the chance he didn't mean it. Now they know he did mean it. Drain the swamp means getting rid of them. Anyway, Mark, Nashville, Tennessee, glad you waited, sir. You're up next on the EIB Network. Hi.
How you doing, Rush? Nearly told me to get right to the point, but I just want to give best wishes to you and Catherine. I kind of understand where Catherine's at. But we wanted to talk about the New York AG. It's more of a nothing burger than you even said, because she didn't even file criminal charges. She's the AG. She could have filed charges. But no, it's just a lawsuit.
That's true. So what is your point about it?
Well, my point is she's the AG. I mean, they could indict a ham sandwich, and they couldn't even indict these guys on fraud, which is what she's accusing them of. So they got nothing.
Well, I think, as usual, I have an alternative take on some of this stuff. She calls this press conference today, and immediately. And she doesn't tell anybody what's coming. She didn't tell anybody what's coming because the drive-bys all thought that it was going to be about Trump's finances. I mean, there are companion stories about Deutsche Bank having released Trump's financial records. That story bucked up right against the story that she was having her press conference at 11:30. So the media clearly thinks that this is about Trump, and the media then thinks that she's got evidence that Trump's lied about his wealth and that he has gotten loans illegally, and that Deutsche Bank propped him up, and they were going to finally, this was going to be the day where they got to the bottom of Trump's lying, stinking financial falsehoods. Then she takes to the stage, to the podium, and we get all of this diatribe on the NRA. And everybody's scratching their heads. NRA, so what? We know the left doesn't like guns. But the fact of the matter is, and Selena Zito has a story about that, people are buying guns in record numbers. Record numbers of guns are being sold all across America every day, every month, because what do you think they're going to do when the Democrats get serious about defunding the cops, when the Democrats join protesters and rioters and looters, when Democrat governors and mayors go out and try to join those people as they're rioting and as they're looting? What do you think people are going to do? So they're out there buying guns left and right. And she's going after Wayne LaPierre for playing golf and misappropriating funds from the NRA for his personal pleasure and enjoyment. I think this, folks, I think contrary to what you're hearing in the drive-by media every day, I do not believe the Democrats think that they are cruising to a landslide win over Trump and in the House and the Senate. I don't believe they think that for a minute. In fact, I think they probably think the opposite. And I think this going after the NRA is a way to re-energize some Democrats to go out because they hate the NRA. I think it's a way to fundraise. I think it may be a way of getting out the vote. Not just in New York. She's doing this is a national assault on the NRA. But I think what it means in a generic sense is that they are not confident that they are on the verge of winning all of government back, never, ever again to relinquish it. That's what the media wants you to think we're on the verge of. That Trump is blowing it, that Trump's destroyed it, that Trump's made everybody mad, that nobody likes Trump anymore. People can't wait to get rid of Trump. Everybody, even the people who voted for him, they can't wait to put the Democrats back in power, because that's a normal thing. When the Democrats get back in power, there won't be a virus, there won't be a lockdown, there won't be a show, won't be anything. We'll go back to normal. And I don't believe that that's factual at all. I think as usual, we're being played, we're being manipulated by the Democrats and their friends, their buddies in the media. So I think this going after the NRA has something other than going after the NRA to it. They're serious. I mean, the baby's serious about going after the NRA because they hate the NRA, but it's not going to stop people from buying guns. And it's gonna backfire on voter turnout and fundraising, if I'm right about that. It's gonna backfire big time on them. But the bottom line is they didn't go after Trump, did they? She let everybody think that's what was gonna be announced, and not a word was said about it. So New York City is setting up some COVID checkpoints. In other words, Checkpoint Charlie is back. You're going to need your papers if you want to get into New York while Cuomo is begging you to return. Remember when Cuomo threatened to sue Rhode Island for doing the same thing Cuomo is now trying in his state? We'll refresh your memory when we get back.